An Osho Talk. Zen, the solitary bird, cuckoo of the forest. Number 14.
Hofuku said, "There is a man now passing behind the Buddha Hall, and he knows this is Tom, this is Dick, or this is Harry. There is a man passing before the Buddha Hall. Somehow or other, he sees nothing and nobody. Tell me, where is the profit and loss of Buddhism?" A monk said, "Because he distinguishes things badly, it means he can't see." Hofuku said, "Quats." Then he said, "If this is the Buddha Hall, he can't see." The monk said, "If it wasn't the Buddha Hall, he could see all right." Hofuku said, "It is just because of the Buddha Hall that he can see anything." On another occasion, a monk said to Bokuju, "I beg you to expound to me the great meaning of Buddhism." Bokuju said, "You bring it to me and I'll expound it." The monk said, "Please tell me." Bokuju said, "When we break the eastern hedge, we must mend the western fence." A monk asked Joshu, "What is this eye of the one who never sleeps?" Joshu said, "The physical eye of the ordinary man." He added, "Though he may be said not yet to have the spiritual eye, the physical eye may be considered to be the same thing." The monk asked, "What is the eye of the one who sleeps?" Joshu said, "The Buddha eye, the eye of the law, is the eye of him who sleeps." And once a monk asked Tendo, "What is the eye that lacks nothing in its practical application to life?" Tendo answered, "It is just like blindness."
Munisha, before I answer and discuss the profound sutra you have placed before me, I have to deal with something urgent but non-essential. Tomorrow will be too late, so I have to deal with it today. I used to think that idiots don't grow. They always remain idiots. Today I have found that they grow. They become more idioter. The whole credit goes to that old goat of Puri, Shankaracharya. For almost 2 weeks he has been insisting that no untouchable, no sudra, can enter into the temple of Nathdwara. It will destroy its purity of thousands of years. Never any Sudra has entered in it. He has even challenged me to discuss on the point. He also has asserted in a press conference that he is ready to be arrested, but he won't allow any untouchable to enter the temple of Nathdwara. But in these 10 days, from every nook and corner of the country, he has been bombarded. He was hoping at least the Orthodox will suffer. They have remained silent. And any intelligent man cannot support it. Seeing that the situation is getting out of his hand, today he has made a statement. That I have been misrepresented. Now almost thousands of papers of all the 30 languages of this country for 10 days continuously has been misrepresenting him, and he has been silent. Now he has come with a new statement, and the statement is that I never said that Harijan, the untouchables, cannot enter Nathdwara. I have said they do not need to enter Nathdwara. They are God's people. The word Harijan means God's people. They don't have to go to any temple. God will come to them himself. In the first place, no Hindu scripture calls them Harijan. They are called Sudras, untouchable. Harijana, the word, was invented by Mahatma Gandhi for his own politics. Sometimes just by changing name, a great consolation comes. Nothing has changed, but he started calling the Sudras as God's own people. But it is very strange that God's own people should suffer always, and the others who are not God's own people should enjoy the richness, the respectability, all the facilities that are available. But Harijanas were happy that their name, untouchable, so dirty that they cannot be even touched. Not even their shadow can be touched. If you touch their shadow, you will have to go through a purification process. You will have to call Brahmins. You will have to take a bath in the Ganges. you will have to be surrounded by priests chanting mantras, then only you will be back again to your own caste. Otherwise, you have fallen. You have touched the shadow of a sudra. But by changing the name to Harijan, God's own people, sudras felt very good, very consoled. This is how the politicians and the priests work. In reality, nothing changes, just the label. But now it makes them feel that they are God's own people. This Shankaracharya of Puri is saying something which is even more stupid than his early statement that he will prevent Harijanas from entering Nathdwara. Now he is saying they are God's own people. God will come to them. I want to ask him, what about others? What about himself? Why others are going to the temples? Nobody should go. At least the temple of Puri should be closed for Shankaracharya. If God is going to come to the people of his own choice, then the Brahmins have been of his choice for thousands of years. They should not go to the temples. In fact, nobody should go. I agree perfectly. There is no need. These temples should be changed into schools, into hospitals, into anything utilitarian. They have accumulated most of the money of the country. That should be used in schools, in colleges. Now he will be in a more difficulty. If God comes to meet his own people, he has saved himself from his previous statement, but he has now put himself into more difficult and complex problems. Now all the Hindus, other than Sudras, should ask him, what about us? Is God going to meet us out of the temple or in the temple? If he meets the Harijanas who have been for thousands of years condemned out of the temple, then why we should go to the temple? Then in fact, the very necessity of temple is no more there. God has to be met outside under the trees, under the stars. Up to now he was against Harijans. He is still against. He thinks he is being a great politician by saying that they need not go to the temples, but I want to create more difficulty for him. all remaining Hindus should ask him that, what about us? You are putting us lower than the Sudras. And what about yourself? Why you go to the temple? And what is the need of all your scriptures? Just meet the God outside in the open air, by the side of the sea, by the side of the river, anywhere, wherever you remember Him, He will be there. If He can come to meet to the untouchables, you are touchables, He can even touch you. Because of this, I had to change my standpoint. I used to think that retarded people never grow, they grow. They become more retarded. Shankaracharya is a living example. Now, he has to answer the whole country that what is the status of temples and scriptures, and what is the need of worship, yajnas, statues, and what is the need of caste? If Sudras are people of God, others are also people of God. Or do you want to say that only Harijans are the people of God and others are not even cousin brothers to Harijan? This fellow should be put right. He is getting more and more senile. He needs to be hospitalized. And if nobody allows him, I am ready to allow him here. And we will give him a good round through therapies and cleanse him with all this nonsense that he has been carrying. There is no need for him to be arrested and become a martyr. He is simply sick. But he will not realize it. He will have to be forced to realize it, that he is suffering from psychological illness. He should renounce the post of Shankaracharya and just get entered into a madhouse where he will find very similar souls, is speaking the same language which nobody understands. One of my friends Narendra's father had a strange illness. 6 months of the year he used to be mad, and 6 months of the remaining year he was absolutely sane. Whenever he was sane, he was sick, ill. Always this problem and that problem and headache and stomach ache, and he looked very sad. And whenever he became mad, he was perfectly healthy, no sign of any sickness. Once when he was perfectly mad and healthy, he escaped from the house. He was caught by the police in Agra, where Taj Mahal is. For a very strange linguistic problem, he entered into a sweet shop. There is a sweet which is called khaja, but khaja also means eat it. So he asked the shopkeeper what it is. He said, khaja. So he started eating it. The man said, are you mad? He said, you must be mad. You told me khaja. A crowd gathered and the police came and he was brought to the magistrate, and the magistrate was also at a loss that poor fellow is not wrong. Why you make such names of sweets? He simply followed what you said. But asking other questions, he figured out that he is mad. He was sentenced to madhouse for 6 months. Not knowing his psychological history, that his madness, 3 months are over. And after 3 months, he will become sane on his own. There is no problem. It was simply a swing from madness to sanity, from sanity to madness. The whole life he has been on the swing. So while in the madhouse, 3 months were perfect. He enjoyed with all the mad people, loved the place. In his madness, he drank something that was brought to cleanse the toilets. He drank the whole bottle. For days on, he was suffering from diarrhea, vomiting. But because of this diarrhea and vomiting, within 15 days, he became sane. All heat went out. He became completely calm and quiet. Then he became afraid, surrounded by all the mad people, somebody pulling his hair, somebody trying his finger into his ear, somebody was sitting on his shoulder. It was all good up to now, but now he tried hard to convince the superintendent that I am no more mad. The superintendent said, "Don't bother me. Every madman says that. That is no argument." You will have to remain here until you fulfill your sentence of 6 months. He said, "In 3 months these mad people and you will kill me." It was good, immensely good. I was enjoying. "Why you brought this bottle here?" But he has to suffer lies. When he came out, I asked him, "Uncle, how things have been?" He was very friendly to everybody, except his family. Everybody enjoyed him. The family was in suffering because he was stealing things, distributing them to the beggars, borrowing money from anywhere, and the family has to pay it, purchasing anything that he wanted. A great shopper. All kinds of junk, it does not matter what it is. Just if it is cheap, he will purchase. So the family was in difficulty. I remember Narendra was so small. But these small children used to watch him and shout to their mother that he is trying to take something away. He is trying to open the locker. Everybody is on watch. He said to me that everything was so good for 3 months. I had enjoyed, I had found my people, but when I became sin, I found these are not my people. I hope that Shankaracharya of Puri in any madhouse will find his friends, similar ideas, he will enjoy it. It is not going to be a suffering or a punishment. It is a promotion. And to leave him out in this insane condition is harmful to the society. For the sake of society, he should be forced into a psychiatric clinic. I have never thought that after 10 days he will start lying. Now he says he has never made any such statements. And thousands of paper all over India had been reporting if one paper has done it, one could believe, but these thousands of paper cannot be in a conspiracy, and they are all owned by high caste Hindus. They were ashamed that he was making such statements. The untouchables had been kept out of the temples. There is no need to make statements, no need to make any fuss about it. Just prevent them. In fact, they themselves don't go. Other politicians are persuading them to enter into temple. They know that they will be beaten. They know that their houses will be burned. They know that their women will be raped. They know perfectly well that the police will stand there in favor of the high class, richer Hindus. Nobody is going to protect them. But politicians use human beings just like things, commodities. The politicians who are trying them to enter the temple, their whole object is to have their vote, temple or no temple. They want them to be rejected from the temple so that they can sympathize with them, that we have made every effort, we risked our lives, now at least give us your votes. And Shankaracharya was defending the higher class Hindus, which are three times more than the Sudras. His interest is also in the votes. Just 2 days before, he said that perhaps I will have to enter into politics. It is better he enters. At least this mass of a religious saint will drop, and he will be just an ordinary gutter politician. It will be a great day of celebration. At least we will celebrate. He should drop his Shankaracharyahood and run for elections. But don't lie to people and don't make such stupid statements. Everybody is as divine as anybody else. There cannot be any distinction. Anybody who makes a distinction is the enemy of the people. Manisha has asked a beautiful very significant dialogue. Hofuku said, there is a man now passing behind the Buddha hall, and he knows this Tom, this Dick, or this Harry. Strangely enough, When I entered, I found three women, not three men, just walking behind the Buddha hall. But times have changed. And it does not matter who was walking, the question can still be asked. And there is a man passing before the Buddha hall. Somehow or other he sees nothing and nobody. Tell me, where is the profit and loss of Buddhism? He is asking, in other words, to make it simple, that three persons I see behind the Buddha hall, one person I see in front, they seem to be almost frozen statues. They must be in meditation. They don't see anything, they don't bother about anything. This man is asking Hofuku, the master of the temple, where is the profit and loss of Buddhism? If people become so careless that you pass in front of them and they don't even look at you, as if nobody has passed, they are so self-centered that the whole world outside has disappeared, then what is the point of Buddhism? This is a loss or a profit? A monk said, because he distinguishes things badly, it means he can't see. Hofuku said, quartz, to the monk who was answering the person, that because he distinguishes into good and bad, into black and white, into dead and alive, that's why he cannot see what those three persons behind and one person in front are doing. Hofuku salted the Zen quartz, which is equivalent to the stick hitting on your head, because the master cannot carry always the stick. So they have found an equivalent. And certainly when a Zen monk or master shouts quartz, it hits harder than any stick can. It keeps you utterly silent that what happened? Why he had started shouting in a strange way? A sound which means nothing, but it can awake. Any sound, meaningless or meaningful, can wake you up. Zen experience is that certain sounds reach into certain centers of your being. That is the experience of all the mystics of the world. For example, Sufis have found the sound who. That if you repeat who continuously, you will find the center of your life just 2 inches below your navel, hit again and again. Soon there will be sparks coming out of your life center. In this country, they have found Om, which is mild. According to the characteristic of the people who have lived in this country, it does not hit very hard, but it pushes. Om, Om, again and again, and it pushes you into a different space that is not mind. Zen has found, just like their character, their training, their samuraihood, they are warriors. Quartz, it hits exactly the same center as who. When you greet each other with Yahoo, you are hitting the same centers. Hofuku said, if this is the Buddha hall, he can't see. The monk said, if it was not the Buddha hall, he could see all right. Hofuku said, it is just because of the Buddha hall that he can see anything. Now, in the language of Zen, anything and nothing are equivalent. To see nothing is to see all, because nothing is the very source of all. The question is the Buddha hall. One is saying that if these people were not in the Buddha hall, they could see everything. You all see everything outside the Buddha hall. But in the Buddha hall, you stop seeing all kinds of stupid things. You become almost blind to the world. Your eyes turn inwards. You start seeing only your own being, as if nothing else exists. Hofuku said, it is just because of the Buddha that he can see anything. A very illogical dialogue, but if you understand, I have made it absolutely logical. To sit like a Buddha, you stop seeing the whole world. Because you start seeing your inner being. And to run around seeing things, you forget all about yourself. On another occasion, a monk said to Bokusu, I beg you to expound me the great meaning of Buddhism. Bokusu said, you bring it to me, I will expound it. These were great masters. You cannot drag them into intellectual thinking. You cannot drag them down from their hilltops, from their watching silence. What he says, you bring it to me. You want to understand Buddhism? Just bring it here. Now nobody can bring Buddhism. It is not a thing. Bring it to me and I will expound it. And if you cannot bring, I am sorry. The monk said, please, don't ask such impossible thing. Just tell me the meaning of Buddhism. Bokusu said, when we break the eastern hedge, we must mend the western fence. By saying this, he is saying that a dialogue between me and you is almost impossible. It is like a man whose eastern hedge is broken and he starts mending the western fence. He is an idiot. You are doing the same. The only way I can expound Buddhism is to bring it to me. How one can bring Buddhism? If one comes in silence and stillness and sits by the side of the Master without even asking, just waiting in deep trust and love. The very presence of the Master will become a great sermon. Zen is not a theorization. It is not some philosophy. It is a very real experience, almost tangible. But you have to understand its way. You be open, silent, and the Master will pour all that He has. But in words, you can get lost, you cannot understand the essence of being a Buddha. The only way is to be. A monk asked Josu, "What is this eye of the one who never sleeps?" It reminds me a night 25 centuries before, when Gautam Buddha was alive. He used to sleep in the same posture every day. And the whole night he will not move side to side, will not change his posture, not even an inch. Just nearby there are Ajanta caves, the last cave depicts Gautam Buddha is sleeping. That pose has become known as the lion's pose, because lion also sleeps on that side without moving in the night. Ananda was very much troubled, because every night he was seeing, sometimes in the middle of the night he may wake up and Buddha is absolutely still, just as he has always been. That night he could not resist his temptation. He said, "It is not good to disturb you in the night. The whole day you have been walking and teaching, but I cannot resist. For 20 years I have been watching. You can understand how long I have waited. I have to ask it anyway. How do you manage to remain in the same posture? As you go to sleep, the whole night the same posture. You sleep, or you simply go on keeping the posture? Because I have to move continuously." Gautam Buddha said, "I have found the right posture. Now there is no need to change it. And I am as awake as anyone, even while my body is asleep." And I have found for the body the right posture once. You have still searching for it. It is not simply a question of turning and tossing the body. It is because your mind is tossing and turning. I have gone beyond. There is no mind. The body simply lies down like a corpse. Have you ever seen any corpse changing posture? Only in one story. A woman reached to the pearly gates, and as Saint Peter opened the door, she asked immediately about her husband, "Where is Tom?" Saint Peter said, "Dear lady, there must be millions of Toms. You will have to describe me in detail. Just tell me something about which Tom. I will try my best to find him." He said, "I don't know how to describe. Only one thing I remember, that when he died, before dying he said that, 'Remember not to be unfaithful to me, because if you are unfaithful to me, I will toss and turn into my grave.'" Saint Peter said, "Aha, don't be worried. He is a well-known figure. Here we call him Whirling Tom." "I will find him for you. Somewhere he must be whirling." It is your mind. Once your mind is at rest, it disappears. Your body can remain asleep, but your inner eye, your inner sensitivity, awareness, can still remain burning like a small flame. Not only watching your own body, but also watching the silent mind, the stillness surrounding you. The enlightened man cannot sleep in the same way the unenlightened sleeps. When the unenlightened man sleeps, he is simply unconscious. The enlightened man sleeps, but he is not unconscious. Joseph said, the physical eye of the ordinary man, he added, though he may be said not yet to have the spiritual eye, the physical eye may be considered to be the same thing. The question is, if your mind is silent, that even your physical eyes stop moving. You can try it as an experiment. This is the way how dream psychoanalysts find out whether a sleeping person is dreaming or not. And now there is much research going on about dreams and dreamless sleep. And it has completely turned the ancient old idea. The old idea was that there are few dreams once in a while. Mostly early in the morning when you are going to wake up. Otherwise, you sleep soundly. Modern research says you dream 6 hours out of 8. If you sleep 8 hours, 6 hours you dream. Not solid, broken here and there. Those 2 hours are also not solid. 10 minutes here, 15 minutes there. But the proportion has never been even mentioned anywhere in the world. And the second revolutionary thought has come out of it. When you are watching somebody sleeping, you can decide just by looking at his eyes. They are closed. But if he is dreaming, then you can see under the eyelids, the eye is moving. That movement is absolutely clear. Just as you read, you have to move your eye. Just as you see the film, you have to move your eyes. Dreaming is a kind of film running on the screen of your mind. The eye has to move with it. The researchers have found, contrary to the traditional wisdom, the traditional wisdom was that if you don't dream at all, that is a healthy sign. The modern researchers have found just the opposite. If you don't dream, of course this research is not done with people who are meditating. Otherwise the results will be different. This research is done on ordinary people. If they don't dream, dreaming is a way of throwing away all dust that they have gathered the whole day. If they don't dream, they will go mad, because every day the dust will go on collecting, and sooner they will find surrounded by dust, thick layers of thought, incomplete experiences, all kinds of junk, and they will not be able to find the way out and how to come back home. Every day, just as you take a bath, every day just as you clean your teeth, mind tries to throw all kinds of dust that gathers during the day automatically. It needs 6 hours . So the healthy man dreams 6 hours and sleeps 2 hours. That brings many implications. The researchers have been trying on few persons in one lab, on few other persons by the side of the lab. One lab is trying to disturb the people whenever they start dreaming. Whenever they see their eyes are moving, they wake them up. In the other lab by the side, whenever their eyes are not moving, they wake them up. One is disturbing their sleep, one is disturbing their dream. And the strange conclusion is that the people whose sleep was disturbed and dream were allowed wake up profoundly fresh, without any trouble. And the people whose dreams were disturbed and sleep was allowed, wake up utterly tired, tattered. It seems dreams are more significant than sleep, but this research is only confined to the non-meditators. A meditator throws away all the dust himself. It does not leave it for the biological sleep to throw it away. He consciously and with full awareness throws it away. Then his sleep becomes a deep silence and also a deep awareness. This awareness has been called the third eye. The third eye is only a symbol. What we are doing here in the every day in meditation, within 2 minutes you are throwing almost 6 hours load. It is a question of totality. Don't hold, don't think that what people will think about you. Here there is nobody even listening to you. Everybody is so much involved in himself, and everybody is competing with everybody else. This throwing away gibberish will reduce your dreams and if you are brought to be examined for your sleep, results will be different. Your dreams will be far less and your sleep will be longer. And a new factor will have arisen in you, a thin line of awareness, which as you go on growing in meditation becomes more and more bigger. A point comes in that fire of your awareness, all your dreams burn. Only sleep is left. The body sleeps, it needs, it has been tired, it needs rest. But your consciousness is never tired. It burns bright day in, day out. The monk asked, what is the eye of the one who is asleep? Joseph said, the Buddha eye. The eye of the La is the eye of him who sleeps. In fact, your sleep is as insane as your waking. Just consider for a moment, is your waking sane? Are not insane thoughts moving inside you? Anger and greed and hate and possessiveness. And thousands are the names, all kinds of madnesses that are going inside you, although you are trying to hide them. You are wearing a mask just as you are hiding your body with clothes. You are hiding your mind with smiles, with thoughts, talking with people. Your conversations are nothing but distractions, distractions of your insane mind. I used to travel in this country for almost 20 years, and it was an experience because I had traveled only in the air-conditioned coupe, So once in a while there was another passenger, otherwise I was alone. The other person will immediately try to make some conversation. And I had a beautiful opportunity, so I will tell him my name, my father's name, my father's father's name, how many brothers my father has, how many children my uncle has. And he will be amazed because he has simply asked me my name. I said, you were going to ask all these things. I'm settling everything right now, so we can be silent 24 hours we are going to be together. The man looked a little strangely, but I will close my eyes and once in a while I will open and see what he is doing. These travelings have been my labs of thousands of people. I have not missed a single moment of watching and seeing what is happening. The man will read the same newspaper again and again and again and will start getting angry. Angry at me, but he cannot say. I have told him that don't say a single word. All inquiry is finished. I have told you everything about me. More than that, I don't know either. He will open his suitcase and close his suitcase, open the window and close the window, and I am watching, and in an air-conditioned compartment, he will start tearing, perspiring. He will call the conductor that, can you change my place in some other compartment? Because I will get mad. The conductor said, I don't see who is bothering you. He said, that is the problem. Nobody is bothering. This fellow is simply sitting and looking at me as if I am an experimental zoo and I am behaving insanely, I know. But because of him, I had to do something otherwise. And he has closed conversation from the very beginning. No conversation. So I am reading the same newspaper and getting angry. I open the suitcase and I know there is no need to open it. Put my clothes this way and that way. But what is the point? I go unnecessarily to the bathroom and then look stupid that this is strange. You don't have anything to do in the bathroom. Why you are going? The conductors almost all the conductors knew me because for 20 years traveling, every driver, every conductor, every station master, the conductor will say that when you will start being mischievous, that poor fellow is getting mad. And I knew it from the very beginning that this is going to happen. One night, I left Bombay near about 50 friends had come to see me off. And in the compartment there was one man, a Mohammedan. And in another compartment, because in Indian railways there is only one long compartment for air conditioning, divided into small cabins. In the other cabin there was a Brahmin. You can see these people with their dresses. The Brahmin was declaring on his forehead. The Mohammedan with his cap. The conductor asked me with whom you would like to travel. One is Mohammedan, one is a Brahmin, other compartments are full. I said, the Brahmin will be more hilarious. He said, you travel, are you? You never get tired of traveling, and I know now this Brahmin is going to be into trouble. And as I reach in, the Brahmin, just like the Brahmin way, lie down on the floor and touched my feet, thinking that I am a great Mahatma. 50 persons have come to send me and they touched my feet and garlanded me. And I said, what are you doing? I am a Mohammedan. And he stood up and he said, if you are a Mohammedan, then what? Why you did not say before? You have spoiled my whole night. Now I have to take a bath in the cold night. Don't you consider? I said, what I can do? I entered, I had not even a chance to say a word and you touched my feet. Obviously, you have to take a bath. So he went to take a bath in the cold night. But when he came back, he said, really? Are you a Mohammedan? I said, I was just joking. You joking? And the water is ice cold? I said that I thought you will understand the joke. He said, this is not right. I was certain that you are not Mohammedan. But when you said you are, there was no question not to believe it. He touched my feet again and said, "Forgive me." I said, "You will have to take another bath." He said, "What? What happened?" I said, "Really, I am a Mohammedan. Can't you see my beard?" He looked at me and he thought about again having a bath. He called the conductor immediately and he said, "Can you find a place somewhere else?" The conductor said, "What is wrong? You are in some trouble?" He says, "Some trouble? I have taken twice cold bath in the middle of the night. And now I cannot sleep because I cannot convince myself that this fellow is Mohammedan. He is not." The conductor said, "As far as I know, he is not." He said, "You are a very good man. You saved me, but he was torturing me." I said, "I was simply testing whether you are a real Brahmin or not." He said, "That is the way of the great saints." He touched my and the conductor said, "What are you doing?" Because he knew me. He is a Mohammedan, and a Brahmin touching the feet of a Mohammedan, you will go direct to hell. He said, "Rather than going to hell, I will go direct to the bathroom again." But this is the world. Unconscious people, Josu's statement that the inner I is the Buddha I, the I of the law. The law according to which the whole universe runs. And once a monk asked Tendo, "What is the I that lacks nothing in its practical application to life?" Tendo answered, "It is just like blindness. The man who has known himself becomes almost blind to all the distinctions, discriminations, divisions, dualities. He becomes almost blind to all things that you see and you live and you behave according to them. But his blindness is far more important than your eyes. To be a Buddha and blind is far more significant than to have eyes and not to be aware of oneself. For centuries it has been a discussion that when you make the statue of Buddha, whether you should keep the eyes open or closed. The discussion became so hot that finally they decided that let his eyes be half open and half closed. Everybody satisfied. I was in a Buddhist temple having a meditation camp there, exactly where Gautama Buddha has become enlightened in Bodh Gaya. I asked the priest, that this is not possible. Buddha must have been blinking his eyes. He cannot keep them always half open and half closed. It is possible he can keep them closed. It is not possible to keep them open. Are half closed. The priest said nobody asked it, and for centuries we have decided because of conflicting groups. Another sect that was born side by side of Buddhism is Jainism. The same problem, whether Mahavira's eyes should be closed or open. On this stupid question, Jainas have become divided into two sects, one that keeps Mahavira's eyes open, one that keeps Mahavira's eyes closed. In a Jaina conference, I was saying to them that now electricity is available. You can make the eyes blink. That will be truer to life. And they said, you are joking about Mahavira too. I said, I am simply suggesting an idea to keep closer to reality. Neither Mahavira was blind, nor he could have managed to keep his eyes open completely 24 hours. Up to now, it was okay that you managed to divide into two sections. Now there is no need. Just attach the statue with electricity and Mahavira goes on blinking 24 hours. And that will be joyous to also to look at Mahavira blinking. And sometimes to make it hilarious, you can make one eye blink. Religion should be a joy, this making Mahavira blind and the other party is doing the other stupidity, keeping his eyes open continuously. The problem is with our unconsciousness. We decide things and we also decide things about the people who are enlightened. We don't have any right. We are going to commit mistakes about making any judgment about the enlightened one. Because we cannot see that far, that deep, that high. We are creeping on the earth. We cannot see the eagle far away in the sky. And the people who have lived inwards have entered into a different world of which you are blind. And naturally they have become blind to you because they don't look at your world as any more significant. They have found a more authentic life, a more beautiful existence. This inner clarity, this seeing into oneself, is called the third eye or the Buddha eye. When you look inwards in your meditations, remember just one thing, your interiority. Forget everything else. As if that was all dream. And you have entered into a different area of existence where dreams cannot follow you. A Zen poem, the wind drops, but the flowers still fall. A bird sings, and the mountain holds yet more mystery. It is not that a man of inwardness becomes blind to the beauty of a bird on the wing, or the mystery of the mountains, or the flowers falling. He simply becomes blind to all that is nonsensical in our minds. To our jealousies, he becomes blind. He does not know what it is. He has forgotten that language. He does not know what greed is. He has forgotten that language. He has forgotten your ordinary mind completely. He has entered into no mind. into universal mind. There another law, more fundamental than any law that we have created in our codes, prevails. Basu has this, the chasteness by the eaves in magnificent bloom passes unnoticed by men of this world. You think you have eyes, but you may not have looked even at your wife accurately. You may have lived with her and you may have never looked into her eyes. People live together but remain strangers. Keep a little distance always. Remain fearful of being dominated by the other. And the flowers and the stars, they come every night, every day. But how many people see the sunset and the immense beauty and the color that the sunset spreads on the horizon? The roses may be blossoming in your own garden, but you don't have time. You are reading a third-rate yellow newspaper. You are reading about politicians and all the nonsense that they go on doing to humanity. But you will not look. You don't have time. You will not look at the night when all the stars arrive. Your vision is very small. The man of inner eye does not become only aware of the inner mysteries, he becomes also aware of the mysteries that are just around you, everywhere. A Buddha, one who is awakened, is awakened to truth, to beauty, to goodness. His riches are great. Nan O Mayo has written, not falling, not ignoring, a pair of mandarin ducks alighting, babbling anywhere. Zen is in its very essence a great poetic, aesthetic sensibility. It gives you more aliveness. It gives you and your senses their maximum. A man of Zen lives at the optimum. One cannot live more than he lives. Each breath is total in itself, and each moment is so full. Blessings, of ecstasies, of a great love not directed to anybody but simply spread like fragrance of flowers. Whoever is ready to receive it can have it, but whoever wants to grab on it will lose it. Manisha's question is the meditator's view the bird's eye view? It is much more, Manisha. It is certainly a bird's eye view, but it is much more, because the bird can see his vision is far bigger than yours, just because he is at a higher altitude. But the man of awareness is not only at a higher altitude, he is also as a deeper interiority. A bird cannot become a Buddha. It is man's right, only man's right, to become a Buddha. Man is evolution's highest peak, but don't stop at it. One step more, and you would have stepped on the Everest of being. Before we go deeper into ourselves, few intimate laughs, just to clean the air and to make you more light, weightless, less serious. Two Iranian deaf, mutes, Mustaf and Adrul are sitting in a car in Baghdad, conversing in sign language. Let us pick up some girls and get lit. Signs Mustafa, great. Signs Adrul. Soon they spot two girls who are also deaf mute. How about a little loving? Indicates Mustafa. Fine. The girls sign back. But do you guys have any rubbers? I know. Let us stop at the nearest drug store and get some. The boys signal back. At the next corner they stop and Adrul goes into the store. Half an hour later, he returns with a confused expression on his face. What happened? What took so long? Signs Mustafa. Well, replies Adrul, I went in and showed the man that I wanted some rubbers. He said the baby bottles are down that aisle. Seeing that he did not understand, I made gestures of the love act. He said the magazines are on the left. In desperation, continues Adrul, I unzipped my pants, laid my machinery on the counter, and put a dollar next to it. The clerk looked at me, and then he looked at the dollar. Then he unzipped his pants and showed me his machinery was bigger. And then he took the dollar. A Russian, a Cuban, and a Catholic priest, and Swami Deva Coconut are on a train traveling across Europe. The Russian takes out a large bottle of vodka. He pours each of his companions a drink, and then throws the half full bottle out of the window. Why did you do that? Asks Swami Coconut. There is so much vodka in my country, replies the Russian. We have more than we can ever use. A little later, the Cuban passes around a box of Cuban cigars. Everyone takes one. Then he throws the rest of the box out of the window. My God, says Coconut, why did you do that? Cigars, replies the Cuban, are a dime a dozen in my country. We have more of them than we know what to do with. Coconut sits in silence for a moment. Then he gets up, grabs the Catholic priest, and throws him out of the window. Paddy and Shyam decide to go hunting one morning. "Listen," says Paddy, "I will bring the guns and equipment, and you bring all the provisions." "Fine," says Shyam. The next morning when they meet, Paddy is loaded down with guns and ammunition. Shyam is carrying a loaf of bread and 6 bottles of whiskey. Paddy throws a fit. "Look, what happens when I leave the provisions to you?" He shouts, "A loaf of bread and 6 bottles of whiskey. What the hell are we going to do with all that bread?" Little Melvin, little Billy, and little Dings Booms are bored sitting around together outside the drugstore. Suddenly, little Melvin finds a $20 bill on the ground and says, "Hey, look, let us go in and change it, and then each of us can buy something really far out." They go in and change the money, divide it up, and disappear into the store. We spend it. Half an hour later, they meet again outside. "What did you get?" Melvin asked Billy. "I got this super basketball, so we can all play basketball like those guys on TV." Says Billy, "What did you get?" "Wow, man," says Melvin, "just like I saw on the TV, I got this skateboard, so we can skate all over the place." Then they turn to Dings Booms. "What did you get?" Dings Booms pulls out a box from his bag and says, "A box of tampons." Melvin and Billy look puzzled. Finally, little Melvin asks, "What the hell did you get for?" "Well," says Dings Booms, "they say on television with the tampons you can do all kind of things like running, horse riding and swimming." "Now, Nivedana, everybody goes absolute crazy." be silent. Close your eyes. No movement of the body. Forget the world outside. Just be in. Deeper and deeper. Deeper like an arrow. This beautiful silence and your being in. To make it deeper, Nivedana, relax, let go, just be dead, the body is far away. So is mind. You are just the inner flame at the deepest core of your being. This is the only thing in you that is eternal, that knows no death, no change. In this great moment, you are all Buddhas. Remember it 24 hours, that inside you the Buddha is sitting. You are just a temple inside the temple is this flame of life. To continue to remember it your every act will become graceful. Your every word will carry silence. Your very being will spread joy. Nivedana. Come back. Remembering the Buddha, sit for a moment. Can we celebrate so many Buddhas together?
Yes.